right, guys, what do you say we move on? What we'll do is we'll move through the second talk. As I said at the beginning, I believe in order for us to talk about any part of manliness, it is core that we go through the leader, protector, provider, priest, prophet, and king, right? Okay. You see that by the way we've gone through this. Now, I think in terms of development, human development, spiritual development, two of the things we got to get right as best we can, I believe, are what it is to be a man and a husband, okay? Especially because you guys are looking at dating life. Wish I could talk a little bit more about being a father, and I might be able to include that. But I want to leave extra time for questions here, because this is where we really shake things up, right? So what we're going to do here, we're going to talk about manhood, fatherhood, maybe a little something on mentoring, challenges with leading this life, okay? And what lead into certain challenges of dating, and I know there are many, and that I know that's high on your guys' radar. If we can, gender ideology, okay? I put that last because, be quite honest, I'm not here to banter about all the evils in the world. I'm here to try to impart truth, right? And better ideas. I'm not here to proclaim the darkness, okay? But that is an important, those are important, especially as they impact you here. And so, to be honest, it's not like I have a long commentary on that. It's actually kind of short. Hopefully we can conclude with that before questions. All right, so the question is, what is a man? Now, a vital man. Okay, so he's the third pillar when we speak of a man's identity. What is a man? How do you define him? Now, I say in terms of his qualities, his aptitudes, his role, his identity, his journey, mission, identity, and journey, it's in those 18 pillars, okay? Now, so, but when we think of man, again, it's sort of, we think of leader, protector, provider. I believe if we're to drill it all down, what is a man? I think it was the terms we could talk about as identity, but a mission. What is he? What does he contribute? What's he about? What's his, yeah, what does he do? What does he contribute in society or in the family or the community, in the church? And so we comes down to the qualities he has, the aptitudes, the skills he has. So when we say a man is filled with skills, I say it's those skills to be leaders, protectors, providers. In some way that makes them capable, complete, finished man. Every man wants to be known as a vital man. You know, it's interesting. Remember when you guys were young, remember this, when you were like 3 or 4, you fantasized about who you wanted to be or what you wanted to be when you grew up. Now, in the 40s and 50s, it would be a fireman, policeman. Nowadays, it's a pilot or a superhero or something else. But even as young men, we fantasized about what we wanted to become. And we believe that fulfilling that role was what we thought was to be a man. And so it's interesting. This is one of the reasons why I believe men are oriented toward tools. They want to fix things. You know, their kids, they want that shaving kit. You want that briefcase. When I was a kid at age 5, I had a real tool belt, and the tools were not plastic. And I was very proud of that. We all want to have those abilities, those aptitudes, and even the equipment. That's why tools mean a lot to us men. You know, we have a lot of tools, you know. Makes us feel better about ourselves. But there's something about a man knowing he needs those tools to carry out his manhood, right? So there's a lot of people who disagree with me on what makes and how you define a vital man. While I don't think these 18 pillars, I could say, constitutes all of him, I believe they are very important, vital elements. Now, one of the things I said, remember the difference between manhood and manliness. Manhood was about really his mission, his identity, and his journey in life. How do we describe that? And his nature. Now, manliness is the virtue. Now, the word virtue comes from the Latin vir, okay, which means man. So virtue are the qualities a man has. And so when the ancients, by the way, you read Aristotle, he talks about the virtues. He's basically talking about what makes for manhood, not for womanhood. Virtues back then were generic. Okay, we're talking about the qualities of a man. But in any case, I say what I like to do is to reduce into two words when it comes to the manliness, the virtue. And I say a man is called to be a lion and a lamb. What does that mean? As a lion, he's called to be fierce, steadfast, bold, courageous. But as a lamb, he's also called to be kind, courteous, stately, calm, gentle. This is the kind of personality we want in a mentor figure. It's the kind of personality we want in a father. Fullness of lion, and fullness of lambs simultaneously. You guys following me here? You know, today, in today's culture, we talk a lot about the lamb and no lion. Maybe in the 40s and 50s, we overemphasized the lion. You guys weren't around, okay? But when you see some of those earlier movies, there's a lot of emphasis in the lion in the man. And then you had the 60s, things became feminized, and it was all about, you know, all these qualities by which a man is gentle, compassionate, sensitive. You know, sensitive is a big word now, right? At least it was when I was your age in college. But you see, these qualities of a lion, his boldness, his fierceness, the qualities of a lamb, to be stately, calm, gentle, okay, need to be in a man, not 50-50, but 100-100. In other words, what's really cool is, and I've seen this in military men who are just fierce, bold guys, when you really get down to them and know them, they're also very kind, stately, calm, they're at peace. It's really cool, you know, when you're around a man who's a warrior, that somehow in their development, in their training, they developed into lions and lambs simultaneously. Yeah.
I was going to say, because I took Taekwondo when I was younger, say mm-hmm. like middle school, high school, and they taught us how to be fierce with Taekwondo,
yeah.
but at the same time showing restraint.
Yeah.
So training and not releasing everything, but still having that arsenal when it's needed.
Exactly.
And I think that's,
yeah,
it makes sense, like relating it to the lion and the lamb part, because depending on what the situation is, that's when you need to release
yeah.
a portion of.
In martial arts training, it's about, yeah, when you assert and when you don't, when you decline and when you retreat. Not retreat, but you know what I mean. You don't move forward. So, yeah, it's the lion and the lamb there's so many skills to be learned in that. If you ever really understand some of the classical figures like King David, okay, he was fierce in war. He was a slingster too, right? And, you know, he just wasn't picking off Coke bottles. He just didn't hit Goliath by accident. He knew he could drill that stone right between his eyes, okay? He also played the harp. He also was very fond of literature, okay? Same with the samurai, Christian knights, okay? There was always a part that was fierce, but always a genteel, cultured part of them as well. So again, you know, we ask the question, fear. You know, this is what... It's this kind of training that really helps us conquer fear. It's that training that helps us reach that authentic manhood that we all want to become. Now, what's going to happen when we don't get this, when we don't reach this authentic manhood, instead of that man being a genuine leader, he'll either become a tyrant or a passive man. A virtuous leader, he'll reach the extremes. He'll be that arrogant, some use the word bully, or he'll be the just very difficult, you know, harsh. Or it's the other extreme, is that real passive man, does nothing, you know, retreats, won't get involved, won't get engaged. Or instead of being the protector, he'll be an oppressor of others. He'll vindicate those who are guilty, instead of really protecting. And he'll abandon others, abandon the innocent, and protect the guilty. This is what's happening in great measure today. It's the fruit of the emasculated society. So instead of being a provider, as I mentioned before, he'll become either a miser, he'll hoard money, or he'll become a spendthrift. And he'll just spend money. Okay? This you see a lot, no offense, guys, in youth. You know, and you see some of my age, more in youth, where they don't really understand the value of money and provision. They remember trained well in provision, so they spend. When I was a kid and I grew up, you know, we all worked when I was a kid. Okay, it's not so much today. I don't see as much, but fortunately, we were able to work with our hands more when I was young. There's more opportunities, I think, back then. But the idea of me like borrowing money, you know, I mean, that was kind of a foreign concept to me. No, you earn it, you pay for something as you get it. It was just that simple. The entitlement mentality, or depending on somebody else, No, I grew to kind of make it on my own. So, but those who don't, now there's an extreme to that too, okay? Of course, it's the better extreme, right? Than it is to depend, or think you have to depend on others. I believe when it comes to manliness, brothers, leader, protector, and provider is where the rubber meets the road, okay? And the how is the lion and the lamb, okay? So manhood, leader, protector, provider, lion, and lamb. So that when I think of manhood, I think of those five terms. We all set here? Okay. Now, after a man becomes, okay, once one becomes a man, then he moves into this phase, the fourth pillar there, to become what I call a devoted husband. Now, this is a huge subject. A lot of books are written about what makes a good husband. Only women read them. But a man does want the skills of what it takes to be a good man, a good husband to a woman. And he aspires, a man really does aspire deep down, that he wants to be a strength of a woman. He wants to be her hero, her lifeline. And she wants this as well. And deep down, I believe, despite formation and other things, deep down, every man wants to be her leader, her protector, and her provider. And this is what, trust me, a woman wants. When I was here last April, I don't know if you guys saw, okay, the women were in and out. Most of them, it was like they were like deer in headlights listening the entire time. They just couldn't believe what they were hearing. And so I said, okay, ladies, let me test something out. I said, isn't the case that all of you want a selfless, sacrificial leader, protector, and provider in your lives? About 40% raised their hands. Now, if you ask me, it's a very high percentage, right? Because I have a feeling a lot of those women didn't want to be known as one who would raise their hands, right? Deep down, guys, every woman wants a sacrificial and selfless leader, protector, and provider in her life. Now, you guys are, most of you guys are still fairly young, and one of the things that you learn as you go along, and maybe some of you have seen this in your experience, is that women are kind of complex. They're complex emotionally, right? And there is one woman tells me, well, women are not to be understood. You're just supposed to be understanding. Okay, well, fair enough. Okay. So women are very delicate in their emotional life. You know, it's interesting. I often say that, yeah, they're very complicated in their emotional life. But in terms of their needs, I believe women are a little more simple. But the problem is you don't meet their simple needs, they can get very complicated. A woman's key need, or key needs, there's, and this is how I like to look at women. Most women like this. There's something of the daughter, the spouse, the daughter, the wife, and the mother in every woman. And something about the daughter who wants to be received. A woman has a key yearning to be received. A spouse, believe it or not, and this would be probably the most unpopular thing I'm going to say today, is a woman, deep down, wants to be surrendered to a man whose leadership she trusts. It's her way of, I'll use the word submissive, okay? But when she does that to a man she really trusts, then you could see a bond there that's very strong. And he will always, if a man rises to that responsibility and she trusts him, men come alive. Men come alive. And there also is a mother to be selfless. One of the things about women, they have amazing abilities to find out how to serve in ways we men kind of don't. We men, we kind of have the macro vision of things, you know, the big things we want to do. Women, they're very sharp. They could see the individual needs. This is what John Paul II called the feminine genius. They could see these micro needs everywhere, you know. And so, as we say, they can multitask. Well, in some way you can multitask, some way you can't. You could do many things at once, but you never do any one of them really well, okay? But women do have the ability, and this is why they're in the raising of children, they have this ability to tend to all many children, many things all at one time. It's their aptitude, it's their ability. But part of a manhood is respecting that. When a man approaches a woman, I believe every woman, again, has these built in her. She's a daughter who wants to be received, a spouse who wants to be surrendered, and a mother who wants to be selfless. And we have to respect that, and we have to protect that. And so we'll take questions after this, okay? In a woman who wants to be received, we have to always make them feel safe, okay? And they need to be validated. And a woman wants to be surrendered, we also very much have to make them feel safe. Because when I say surrendered, it means following your lead, okay? Does that make sense? Believe it or not, women, there's something built in them that wants to show men that they love them by following them. Not a very popular thing to say. You probably haven't heard that on this university, have you?
Yeah.
No, probably not, right? But women show their love by following. But you see, in the end, they want to follow. They don't want to lead. And of course, they want to serve. Women deep down want to serve. But one of the things you guys, believe it or not, and this is probably not very popular to say either, women have this genius for service, but their service only has deep meaning when it's interpersonal. See, we guys, we could be mechanics, fix cars, and feel good. We fix the car, get accomplishment. Yeah, it serves somebody. But you see, women, in the order of nature, they don't get much satisfaction of serving, fixing cars. Why is that? Because it's not a very direct service. A woman is designed for very interpersonal relationship. So the happiest women I've seen are the ones who are engaged in occupations that are very person-to-person. Women are about relationship. It's their buzzword, okay? And so they're not, they can, because women have certain aptitudes and they can be very meticulous and very good and have a high sense of order, they can do banking and accounting in some ways sometimes better than a man can. But you see, they don't find a great fulfillment in that as much as they do interpersonal relationships. You guys following me? And so we have to learn how to respect that. And we have to always support them when they serve others. It's vital. I really believe we have to do what we can to validate a woman the way she serves others and how she serves others and her creativity in serving others. Again, they want to be, this is the paradox, and I brought this up last time, and I know some of the women were spellbound by this, but it's true. Okay. We say men are called to lead, protect, and provide, right? Well, that means, what's the opposite of that? Well, it means that women have to, in some way, have to have the capacities, the openness to be led, be protected, and be provided for. Now, this is where you really start seeing the deer in headlights. But instead of teaching women to be led today, we teach them to be independent. Instead of teaching them to be protected, they're trained today, nowadays, to be competitive. Instead of being provided for, we train them to be self-sufficient. Brothers, I believe, I'm a very devout Catholic man. I believe in the supernatural order and the order of grace. And I believe, yes, there's division in relationship and problems inside because of a lack of grace and following God's law. Got it. However, at a core level, I believe the reason why marriages and relationships break down is because of the failure of men to properly and fittingly stand up as leaders, protectors, and providers, and women to be deferential to that. You want to be very careful not to get involved with a woman who's hyper-independent, who's hyper-competitive, or is very self-sufficient. Don't have anything to do with her. I'm just telling you that. Respect her, regard her, but not don't get involved with a woman, because they're going to make you a miserable man. I promise. Now I got a feel for women today, because I'll bring up something very, very important. There's a part of us can say, yeah, well, this is the side we're living in today. You know, women have to lead, protect, and provide for themselves, or they have to be independent, competitive, and self-sufficient. It's just the way things are. Well, okay. It's unfortunate, though, I can see how women, to find themselves in survival mode, need to be independent, competitive, and self-sufficient. And it's unfortunate. I started meditating about this, and it hit me a couple years ago. One of the reasons why women didn't feel the need to go to university is it used to be they were always provided for. If you look at historical literature, there's a reason why women did not own bank accounts, could own property. Sounds tyrannical, doesn't it? They couldn't sue. Why is that? They couldn't vote? That's another question. We won't get into that. Okay, we didn't check the room for snipers first. Okay. So, yeah, I have an interesting commentary on that one. The reason why women didn't have these capacities, not because men were unjust, is because they were always taken, they were always provided for. They were always provided for. The daughters were always provided for by the father, the brothers, the cousins, the community. We always provided for the woman. Now, why is that? Well, it's simple. There's many tasks that are needed in the service of society in the raising of children. Keeping a house, properly feeding children. If a woman's to properly feed children, get this, okay? This is a reality. If a mother of two wants to properly feed her husband, prepare meals, she needs at least 4 hours in the kitchen, okay? Nowadays, it's all shortcutted, and so now we're eating very non-nutritious meals. This is one of the reasons why nowadays kids have cancer and their bodies are breaking down, okay? We're not cooking properly. Cleaning takes a lot of time. It used to be women used to volunteer in the communities. Now we have to pay people for this. It used to be that women used to come in like gangbusters in the church and clean the churches, or they volunteered in the parks and recreation and ran those programs during the summer. So that was in the days where there's more volunteerism. Now everybody's got to be paid. Everybody wants to be paid for everything, okay? And this is the disparagement and denigration of femininity, which naturally did these things. But you see, women used to give of themselves freely and wholly. You didn't pay people to babysit back in the day. You didn't do that. People just volunteered. They tell their daughters, oh, well, you babysit so-and-so's child. And so they naturally served each other, okay? And so a woman needs to be enabled to support, to do these kind of feminine tasks, but they need to be supported in it. Now, I know I'm talking about something, but I was twice your age, very guy in here, okay, when I finally realized this, okay? And so this is tough, guys, and so this is one of the reasons, and we'll get into this later, why it's vital to have a healthy spiritual life, because you see, to be led and navigated in all this, you got to be praying to God that he show you the way, okay? That he give you light. Because you're going to deal with a lot of situations where to lead, to protect, and provide is going to be very difficult, especially to provide. The sacrifices, and I don't think this is my opinion when I say this, the sacrifices a man needs to provide for his family today are on a heroic level. It's very unnatural for a man to be overworked the way he needs to be today in order to provide for his family so his wife can stay at home. Now, sadly, in 90% of the cases, that is no longer reality, especially in Southern California. Brothers, do what you can, to the best you can, to the best you can, to rise up, to lead, to protect, and provide for your families. Make every needful sacrifice, and God will bless you. Okay, God will bless that. It's vital that you do this in a very selfless way, and God will somehow provide. I know of many families who make great sacrifices so a woman could stay home, so a wife could stay home, a mother could stay home to raise her kids. Okay, because kids need that kind of raising. I really believe in the emotional breakdown of the child is because the children were left in the care of somebody else, not their own mothers, okay? That's why we have to have all these counselors in schools and all this psychological support nowadays, because mothers did not raise their children. I don't mean to disparage any of your mothers that found themselves in that situation. I'm not here to criticize that, but that's just the reality. I would ask you and really urge you, encourage you to do all that you can to lead, protect, and provide. And it starts right now. It starts even in your dating life, okay? You know, Jason and I, before I came, we had a little discussion on various elements of, you know, challenges of the college guy. Where does a woman fit in your life? Real tough, isn't it? And I'm glad you pointed something out, Jason, and I think you were just spot on. And Jason said, you know, we have, first of all, our obligations to our education, we have obligations to work, and we have obligations to family. And as we were speaking, and I thought, yeah, the women come last in a way, don't they? And he said, yeah, they do in a way, you know. So you guys have a lot of obligations. But in the midst of that is you're navigating in a world of very independent, competitive, and self-sufficient women. And this is where, you know, well, all of us men, not just you guys, but it's hard. But especially when you're younger and you don't have the experience of years to figure out how to navigate this. But I want to encourage you guys, and this is kind of a spiritual point I could make later on, which I want to say the spiritual points for later, is that, and I can't overemphasize this, you've got to put your trust in God in this one. One of the things we're going to talk about at the end is you've got to put your trust in God as a father, that he will lead you as a son. Sonship and fatherhood are vital, okay, when it comes to the divine being. I'm trying to use language to help you out here, Daniel. But anyways, but this is all intelligible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all understandable. And so you guys need to have sort of like a heroic trust today. And you know, it's harder to raise kids. It's more costly. Life is more complex. And so you guys, you get into these relationships and most of the time you're scratching your head trying to figure out the woman who may be in your life, why she does things the way she does, where she's coming from. Now, she's wondering where you're coming from. But you see, the problem is women want it both ways. They want a strong man, but they also, you can't tell me to lead or follow. Excuse me, you can't tell me to follow, but yet they want a strong man. They want to be provided for, but yet they want to make it on their own. You guys following me? And so the competitive part kind of permeates their personality as well. Well, not all. I take that back. That's not true. But women have this way of being competitive. And I've even noticed, and I'm speaking to a priest about this, even religious nuns, it's like there's this thinking now that they're better than men, that they can do things better. And we're told now that, like I say, as we began with it, the masculinity, its manifestations really are just toxic, you know, at least the kind of masculinity we're talking about. For a man to, you know, stand up as a strong leader, protector, provider, well, that's, and those aspects that follow from that, that's actually toxic. And they want some kind of, I don't know, passive, go-along, equality guy. But they never respect him. They never respect him. This is why St. Paul says, husbands, love your wives, and wives, respect your husbands. How many of you guys would rather be respected than loved by your wives? All of you guys raised your hands. You go for the women? How many of you ladies would rather be loved and respected? Guess what? Nearly all of them will go up. Nearly all of them. Now some just want respect, right? But they want to be loved, cherished, treasured. Okay, it's their natural desire. But we men, at the end of the day, we're not respected. We've lost a place in the relationship, right? And so, yeah, and that's really tough. A lot of guys. And I know a lot of guys who find that the women in their life, I'm trying to give you guys some very important advice, because I know, as Jason mentioned to me, this is some of you guys, things you guys navigate on. So we probably won't get into so much some of the gender ideology stuff. I don't think we have time for that, because I find it more important to kind of press upon you that to take this leadership, protectorship, and provider role as seriously and as diligently as you can. And of all of that, You may not be always the best provider, and you may not always be the best protector. Now, in some way, I believe leader, protector, provider, it's a symbiotic reality. It's one reality. Sort of we say like faith, hope, and charity or something, or like Father, Son, Holy Spirit. They're three distinct, but they're still one reality. I call leader, protector, and provider, I call that manhood, okay? It's a symbiotic, it's a unified reality. However, you could fail in things of providing, and you could fail in certain aspects of protecting. Brothers, I urge you, when you're with a woman and leading a family, take very close care not to falter in leadership. Okay? Always lead. Always lead. Always lead. With kindness, with deference. You know, there's this mentality, even in the Catholic world, that I don't like, that's a little too egalitarian. And so this mentality, even in very diligent conservative Catholics, I know, well, it's a partnership. It's equality. You know, where we both have input, we both work together and work this out. Well, yeah, you work together as partners and you work this out. But at the end of the day, the man has the authority and it's his responsibility before God. But you know what, brothers, and I'll close with this thought before we take questions. For a man to lead, we're in a world now, get this, that won't admit the truth when it's in their face, and that's this. We look at leadership by a man, not by a woman, but we look at leadership as a man by something arrogant, egotistical, presumptuous, right? But leadership is sacrificial, isn't it? It's selfless. It takes blood, sweat, and tears to lead. That's one reason why a lot of women don't want to lead, by the way. They don't like the burden of it. Leadership is burden. And you look at leaders of companies. I know many very successful men. Hey, they're to be at the top, there's a burden there. There's a burden to be a president. There's a burden upon responsibilities to be a principal, a president, whatever, of a school, of a nation, of a student body. There's a burden on a vice president of spiritual advancement or fraternity, right? There's kind of a responsibility there. It's a burden. Okay. And so so to be a good leader is a selfless and sacrificial act. It's not anything of negative act to be disparaged in any way. Okay? You guys will follow me? You all set?
Yeah.
Good. Any questions? Yeah.
I know a lot of men who don't want to be leaders because they don't want to take the sacrifice.
Yeah.
Blood, sweat, and tears.
Well said.
Would you call that a feminized man?
Yeah, I call it emasculated man. It's interesting. I gotta look at the terms, you know, and look at how the ancients and others have defined emasculated and effeminate or feminized. Basically, an emasculated man is one who reclines from, you know, instead of being a leader, he's passive. Instead of being a protector, he's also passive and weak, etc. I call that emasculated. An effeminate man or feminized is one who has more of an overt feminine quality about him.
He's very girl-like.
Girl-like.
Yeah. Know all those.
Oh my God, I was horrified. Oh, I'm so hurt. I was taking this hour-long walk where I live earlier this week, about 5 days ago. Oh, jeez. There was this kid in grade school, taller kid, African-American kid, big kid. And he had his hair like colored and up in a bun. And I said, you know, Lord have mercy. So one of the qualities in a feminine man, he's too concerned about the way he looks. Now, we should look presentable, right? Okay? But to be over-concerned about the way you look, spend too much time in the mirror, that's effeminacy.
Yeah. I used to be guilty of that.
By the way, because one of the things I didn't mention here, that to be a man to rise up to the obligations of manhood are kind of difficult on a number of levels. And one of the things I didn't mention, which is not minor, is the ability, well, I did mention sports and all the rest and the good information, but every day we have to be doing physical exercise. You guys will become emasculated on one level if you fail to continue to exercise. And I used to think, I was under the impression, I used to be very diligent when I was in college, and I exercised 3 times a week. I used to do calisthenics and run 3 times a week, devoted. Then it hit me, only about a couple of years ago, that, oh my gosh, I'm really supposed to be exercising every day. One of the things I see some, my back's now being challenged because of it. Brothers, actually, I exercise twice a day. Now I'm traveling today, so I'm not stable. One is a minor form of exercise. I'll stretch or something. You know, I stretch probably 5 times a week. And I have a vigorous workout about another 5-6 times a week, okay? 2 or 3 times a week, I try to do a minor weightlifting routine, and others, maybe I'm swimming or whatnot, but that's been derailed. I broke my shoulder 2 months ago, and so I'm getting back into that. But brothers, you have to keep strong and vital. One of the reasons is, today, compared to 1970, we as men, especially older men, have a 40% lower testosterone rate. Now that's serious.
That's evident.
That's serious. Okay. And one of the reasons we have a lower testosterone rate, it's the crappy food we all eat. Okay. But we're not exercising. And you have to use your muscles, guys, at least 3 times a week. Some say weightlift only twice, but generally, as a rule, 3 times a week, you've got to be using your muscles. And you've got to be working them at least a half hour. Okay, 3 times a week, at least. It should be closer to an hour. Okay. And so, you know, the older you get, the less you can do hard. Like at my age, you know, I shouldn't be lifting anything under 10 reps. Okay. But, you know, when you're younger, you can handle that big weight and pump out 3 or whatever. But you got to be doing some exercises. And by the way, there's one man who I follow, a health guy. He believes that we're supposed to be out in the daylight for at least 2 hours. The sun is supposed to hit our face for 2 hours during the day because there's glands here that need to be excited. If you don't, you're going to get moody and all the rest. One of the reasons we need sunlight is because we're around electronic devices. And so the eyes need that counter natural light to really nourish them. That's why about 3 times a week I take very long walks. Even if I find the sunlight effective. Now, granted, when it's harsh, 10 to 2, maybe, yeah, I mean, you don't want to be outside really. Try to get as much sunlight as you can. So when you study, study near a window, okay? Try not to study in artificial light. You know, there's a reason why the sun gets up early. So we're supposed to get up early with it, you know, rise up with it, okay? Not at 10 a.m. and go to bed at midnight.
Right. So I know that earlier you mentioned, there's a question that I saved for later, but you mentioned the specific strengths that a woman has just regarding motherhood, just because you said that they're more, I guess, detail-oriented. We have the more bigger picture. They have the detailed stuff. So considering that, you did say that we should respect that.
Yeah.
Now, would you also agree that we should delegate that and know when it's applicable to say, okay, maybe I have the grander picture, but there's maybe some details, things that I haven't gotten figured out, but ask a woman to look at that aspect of things.
That's right. Remember, part of good leadership is delegating and taking the input of others and allowing them to take over their proper domain. You don't want to micromanage.
Right.
Yeah. So this is why, as we say, John Paul II said that men have capacity for the abstract and the universal. Women have more of a capacity for the concrete and the particular. So women are very good in ways weak men kind of miss certain individual needs that need to be met. Men have more of an abstract mind and where they focus more on universals. Women are more concrete in the particular. So they could see more of the overall things, overall decisions need to be made. So for example, a man may make a decision and say, well, you know, for this week, the family, we're going to have to all take a vacation. And the wife may say, yeah, well, Johnny, that's going to hurt him because he has this activity. I know he doesn't want to miss out. Honey, sorry. I believe for the good of the whole family. The whole family needs a week off. Let's take a break, you know. So he's able to make those macro decisions where a woman will sometimes say, oh, but it hurts this one person.
Right.
We can't do that. You follow?
So
they're very sensitive. That's why it's like, we just talked about this, like the worst offense in the world. Hey, this water's not bad, by the way. The worst offense in the world is to offend somebody. So I speak the truth and I offend Roger in the back or Trixie or whatever. Roger, Trixie, not in the back, by the way. I just point back there. Tough crunchies. I'm imparting what I believe is the truth. If it offends Trixie, I'm sorry. Too bad. You know, I wanted to say that in charity, but another part, I'm sorry, too bad. You know? We have to, okay, as you mentioned, we have to kind of learn how to respect that, not criticize that. Okay? Not criticize, because that's your natural aptitude. Okay? This will definitely offend anybody, and so next time we will check the room for snipers.
Yeah.
This is one of the reasons why men have more of a political mind than women do. In the order of nature, it's not me who said this, but you find this written by theologians, philosophers, and ancients, and all the rest. women are good in the domestic sphere, in the social arena. Men are better in the political arena. Again, they think of universals. They see that big picture, so they understand what it takes to run a country. You know? So a man will see a law that he's to vote for the universal, and he'll see, well, yeah, that is for the good of the country overall, the good of the economy and the good of the families. But if a woman says, oh, yeah, but that law is going to hurt my cousin Trudy, we can't do that. Well, it's good for the common good. You guys following me here?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll wear a vest next time, okay? So.
I'm kind of feared for my life getting out of here.
No worries.
All right, any other question, guys?
You're safe with us.
You're safe with you guys. I'm amazed. You know what? I'm going to tell you something. I'll just share it with you. I was kind of surprised. You know, in my ministry, guys, men's ministry, I've got all these crazy degrees and a doctorate and all the rest, and human formation is my passion, right? And for the most part, when you go into forums of this, most of the time, you know, and I navigate mainly Christian Catholic churches, right? Most of the time I speak to guys 30 to 60. I never thought I could connect with college guys. I really don't. I always thought these ideas I'm presenting to you now, I always thought you had to be like in your 30s to understand them. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I did. And maybe it was just the kind of my niche. My niche was more in that area. It wasn't so college. Now it's really cool. I'm moving college. But what's fascinating about, I look at you guys, and at all of you, you look at me. I mean, you're attentive. You're concerted. It's like you don't really get that from older guys. It's kind of like, yeah, all right, yeah. You know, there's a professor, I won't say his name publicly, who arranged for me to kind of start all this. And I said, yeah, you know, I really kind of understand. I'm surprised. The guys are really, they're really following what I'm saying, and they're actually kind of loving it. He says, well, you have to understand, Dr. Chavez. He said, they've been a desert for so long, and finally you're giving them some water.
It's deep.
Oh, wow. But you see, notice, guys, everything I said today, I quote some scriptures and all the rest, I get that. But for the most part, I spoke to your hearts and your human experience, right? Your hearts and your human experience. One of the things that's cool about God, he's so sharp, that if he wants to follow us certain laws or certain truths or whatever, he sort of puts that in our human heart. He embeds that there, right? So we naturally follow through. So even like when I say deep down, you ladies want a selfless, sacrificial leader, protector, provider, ooh, they get all warm fuzzies on that. Oh, and they love. And I said, you know, you even ask them, now, you ladies, don't you want an authentic lion lamb who bold, fierce, steadfast, brave, but also calm, gentle, compassionate? They're all melting. Thanks for coming.
Of
right.
Okay.
Well, let's say closing prayer right now. Glory be to the Father and to the Son and to the Holy Spirit, as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be, world without end. Amen.
Amen.
All right. Let's take a break.
We hope you enjoy this recording of Dr. Phil Chavez, founder of the Men's Academy. To find out more about our training and resources on Christian manliness, visit www.themensacademy.org. Thank you.